All right, welcome back. We are Outside the Box, our clinical podcast to drive performance here in the city of Sugarland. I'm your host, Kevin. And today I have with me a special guest, Jennifer Perry. And we'll get to meet her in a minute, but this is another one of our topics outside of our clinical performance realm that's going to help us be better at how we absorb our information, how we turn to the person next to us and help them absorb the information. We're going to talk about some instructional information and how we do that to improve our learning. So, Ms. Perry, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Why don't you take a minute and tell us about you? We're going to talk an awful lot about what your specialty is here when it comes to education, but let's talk about you. Okay. Let's learn about Ms. Perry.
Ms. Perry. Well, I chose teaching because I wanted to make a difference. So I figured what's the better way to make a difference than through our future and kids. So I always enjoyed working with kids. I've been teaching for 22 years and been in the classroom and found my way from whole group instruction where we just taught everybody and assumed everybody was learning, and then got on board and learned about small group instruction and learned to apply that and do it and be successful and see huge growth with kids. And that projected me into wanting to be a coach and help teachers learn how to do that and be successful with it and get comfortable with it, as my initial introduction to it was not smooth. So I wanted to make that smooth and simple for teachers so that we could help our kids be the most successful possible.
Fantastic. So this has some direct correlation to us, because we tend to get together in a classroom and have a larger group of us as we're learning things. But a lot of our learning tends to be on the job kind of learning. We spend it in the stations. We do company level drills. There might be 5, 6, maybe at most 8 people if a couple of stations get together. So seems like you have some very pertinent experience that you might be able to help guide us through some of this stuff. But as an instructional coach, what are some of your primary functions? Like how do you serve the instructional team as an instructional coach? What's that look like?
Okay. So typically the biggest chunk starts with planning. So my job requires me to plan with all grade levels and be familiar with all the content that needs to be reached. We always plan with the end in mind and come organized and with the intent to, to apply everything and reach all learners. That's our main goal when we come together. Then I'm also responsible for observing teachers presenting these lessons and actually targeting the information, making sure that they're targeting all learners in their representation, and providing feedback, which is a gift, and, you know, being open to also learning from the people that I'm speaking to, all the teachers, as sometimes I'm coaching admin, depending on what it is they need to know and learn.
Okay, so you have a support role, that you're not the one delivering content, but also it sounds like the teachers that are delivering the content, they're doing the bulk of this planning, this coordinating. You're there as a resource to them. But I think it's worth emphasizing that they're not on their own, that they have a bulk of this work. But here you are, that they hit some roadblocks, they hit some barriers, and they have a resource available to turn and say, Ms. Perry, this student isn't responding the way I hoped. Or this lesson was packaged this way and it sounded fabulous until I put it in front of my kindergarten class. Right? Does it sound about right?
Yes.
So let's not discount that for us either, that you're not on your own. If you're going to be the one leading this company drill, realize there's resources and ask for them. We'll talk about some of the planning and the what ifs. Things are going to go wrong sometimes.
True.
I mean, we wouldn't have a profession if things can go wrong sometimes. So for it to be perfect in education, let's talk about planning. What in school, about to start up here, what does team planning look like that you observe? And then when do you, are you at request? Do you identify your own opportunities to inject with resources? What does that look like?
Great question. So the intention is that, and we make it clear, that teachers come prepared. So they have looked at the information. It's not a, we're coming together, what are we doing? You are pre-planning before coming to planning. Mm-hmm. So when we get together, I'm familiar, they're familiar with what's happening, and we're targeting the key skills, focusing on the verbs You know, what exactly do we want them to do? And we plan with the end in mind. Yes, this is what we're teaching, but what do we really want them to walk away with? What do they need to be strong in to go on to the next level?
In more so than just a learning objective, right? We have, like, the
Correct.
state has TEKS as the
Yes.
learning objective, but
Yes.
more than just the TEKS says this, so there's our end state. You're talking a more
Correct.
holistic picture of the end state.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we dig deep into the teaks and we, you know, unpack and look at all of the little pieces in it because it's not as surface level as it may seem.
Okay. And there's this awesome concept that we talk about in there of vertical alignment. And that being a big part of planning, can you help us understand this concept of vertical alignment among your grade levels and where that comes in?
Yes. I would say across a grade level, across schools, across the district, vertical alignment is key. If we're not all using the same terminology and familiar with the scaffolding that happens in education, you know, what did they know before? What do they need to know now? And where is it going? The kids don't buy into it. You know, it's sad enough to say, but it is a buy-in. They need to understand where they're going. And why did what I learned last year? Why was that important? So, my job is to make sure that it is vertically aligned. So, during planning, that is where I can interject and say, oh, you know, in this grade level, we were just discussing the same concept, just on a lower level. This is what they did know. This is what you're doing with it. So, we do that with academic vocabulary, we do it with hands-on activities, using the same tools. So that the kids are seeing the same thing every year, and then they do make connections to how it grows and affects their education.
And that, so th this just ties all into the big picture planning, like you were talking about, of having this laid out, and kind of sets us up for what we're going to talk about with differentiation and where do we push different students. We see this. I think this is a good opportunity for us in emergency services that we'll pick a topic, we'll run a drill on it, and there you go. So we take whatever medications, we take ladder drills. We're going to practice throwing ladders, but we haven't ensured the knowledge ahead of time of the types of ladders, the terminology in ladders, where they're located, or the placement of ladders. What do we need to do with that ladder in place? That there's a very small scale example of vertical alignment of we can talk about placing ladders, but we need to do the functions after. We need to have the base knowledge, the level one, level two knowledge beforehand, then we can hit the level three application. But that's a really good opportunity for us where we kind of fall short with this bigger picture is I'm just going to pick a topic. I'm just going to teach it because we're on duty today and we're going to train today. And our goal becomes putting some hours in the book of training. And there's benefit to it. We're going to be better at that skill. But I think you're right about the buy-in that we as adults, especially if I don't know why this matters, what I'm going to spend my time on it. And I can tell you this skill is important, but like broadening that to here's the big picture and here's where it fits in on both ends and above and below and. Maybe looking at it purely vertical for us in our industry is a challenge because the grade levels are a bit more linear and vertical aligned, but we kind of have more of a like a 360 alignment that there's things ahead of it, behind it, around it, coordinated activities. So I guess the nutshell is it doesn't exist in isolation. That this lesson is never in isolation and it really shouldn't be. So that's all part of this planning of planning specific lessons and where it fits in the big picture, you as a resource being there. So I guess that was part of it too. So do you decide when to get involved of, hey, you see something off track or
Well, it takes a lot of time to build good relationships. So I've been fortunate enough to be on the campus that I'm at for a while, and I have these good relationships. So it does go back and forth. So they'll come to me or they'll ask in the middle of planning particular questions, maybe referring to kids with certain needs that they really want to meet and they're not really sure how to. And in turn, I will find those moments where I'm like, okay, are we really interpreting what is being taught correctly? And did we think about these particular points that really we need to hit hard on because they are going to be a necessity for the kids to have for the upcoming grades.
Okay. And I want to take a chance to tie this back a couple things you said to a couple previous episodes that relationships matter, how you interact with people. That was Marcelo, if you saw that episode of essentially being a decent human being is how you get good interactions out of people. And Chase talked to us about how we package that feedback, the timing of it, where it goes, and how we engage those people. It was more of a relationship building comments in that episode too, when we were talking about feedback, because as you mentioned, feedback is a gift. I may hear that at home once in a while. Feedback is a gift. And so this opportunity to be aligned, we get the bigger picture of things. Help us understand. Well, first of all, let's talk about differentiation, because right, setting up in this vertical alignment gives us the opportunities to effectively differentiate and reach all of these students. Mm-hmm. But what does that mean to differentiate in instruction?
So I would say simply to differentiate instruction is to adjust your teaching to meet the needs of various learners. And in education, that can be gifted and talented, special ed, ESL, just to name a few. I mean, we could go on with that. But and adjusting to meet their needs.
And even in the classroom, we have students that learn faster than others.
Correct.
And, right. Okay, so realizing that students are individuals and the one size fits all isn't necessarily the good application. Mm-hmm. Not even necessarily. Not a good application. I think we can relate to this, that we have a lot of experience in our department. We have some people that have been here 30 years. Mm-hmm. We have some people that have been here just over 30 days, it feels like. And it's just, a lot of our job is experience and this recognition prime decision making. And that experience is valuable. And it's very easy to lose those providers, those personnel with a very basic rudimentary lesson mm-hmm. that doesn't engage them. And then it is very easy to just go right over the heads of young people that are still kind of holding on to that level one, level two knowledge.
Right.
Kind of meant. So again, another prime opportunity for us to make a drill that encompasses everybody. And it might sound like a daunting task. Like, oh no, how am I going to make, because for us it's PowerPoint, right? How am I going to make a PowerPoint that addresses everybody? Right. And I'm going to put some words in your mouth that the great answer is you don't. You don't do that in a PowerPoint.
Right.
So, which gets me really excited, right? So there's differentiation as a concept. It absolutely applies to us. So how do we do it?
How do you do that? That's a great question. It's got to be intentional. So it comes with deliberate planning.
Mm. Back to the planning.
Exactly.
Oh, back to preparation. So mm-hmm. we can't just like, okay.
Yes.
Preparation.
So, you know, we really get into the idea of what do I want? What do I want to share? How do I want to share it? Let me get that done. And it's about getting something done. But the intention is you want to share this information and have them walk away and hold it and use it as a teacher. That's why we go into it. So without deliberate planning, your lesson is really nothing. If you haven't clearly thought about all your learners, what do I need to do for them? And it does take time and it does take effort. But at the end, you have less intervention. So now it's more prevention than intervention by preparing.
I like it. I'd like to put to y'all that if you haven't put any time into preparing, it's kind of like disrespectful of that audience's time.
Yes.
Right? Put some effort into being ready for it. Don't look like a fool, but also respect that time.
Yes.
And I guess it comes down to really some semantics and just perspective. But the way I understand what you're saying is we have this bigger picture. We have this endpoint in mind, and it's more about effectively reaching this endpoint than the process in between. That I can go in with the objective, maybe I'm going to get through my 20 slides of PowerPoint. Mm-hmm. And nobody walks away with anything, but in my mind, I'm successful because I delivered this lecture of 20 PowerPoint.
Correct.
Versus the methods may need to adjust on the fly a little bit because the objective is this understanding is going out the door with people.
Correct.
Is that a...
Yes, no. And it's a hard thing to do, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it sounds easy, but it does take a lot of planning. And then when you said on the fly, it really is on the fly. So you have to be prepared for every aspect of what you think might come your way. So being proactive.
So adjusting on the fly, but having prepared a couple different contingencies
yes.
in the planning, counting on, I believe that's what we talked about, and you had made that comment as we were getting ready for this episode of, like, you have to count on it not going right.
Yes.
I think that's reasonable. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what we do as a
right.
profession. We count on it not going right. So again, the same thing in delivering a lesson is you're preparing these contingencies, preparing a few different what ifs. How do we prepare for what ifs? Like, is this as simple as anticipating questions that people may ask? Is there some other like approach to it?
I think it's a combination. So where you said, you know, no to a PowerPoint, like a PowerPoint can be productive and helpful, but the key parts that you're going to be most effective with are your prepared questions, right? What questions do I want to ask that can draw some information from people? What questions might they ask me that I need to respond to in a way and be familiar with the content and what I'm saying? You know, again, that back and forth and having the relationships helps with it. But also, you know, when you think about what might happen or who might not get the information, why are they not getting it? And how am I going to say this differently? Mm-hmm. Not louder, not again, but how am I going to say it differently so they get the information?
Good. I like it. And as we talk about questioning and what questioning to roll into this, mm-hmm. I think it's a good opportunity to talk about open-ended questions, closed-ended questions. And again, these levels of learning, episode 3, go watch it. Kathy's fantastic. That I can sit in front of the room and ask these closed-ended questions where there is one answer, it's the answer, and that's valid information.
Right.
We take fentanyl. What class of drug is fentanyl? Here it is. It's an opioid. Mm-hmm. Okay. There's not alternate answers to that. There's one answer. There's our level one knowledge that you should know coming into the lesson. Right. Again, back to episode 3. But these open-ended questions about maybe what are some circumstances where fentanyl's not appropriate. And we get to have a couple different appropriate answers. Mm-hmm. And I get to have an answer. You get to have an answer. And now you and I as students now can engage in this dialogue of comparing and contrasting these circumstances. And how do I see your circumstances differently than you do is how we develop this critical thinking of it and better learning. That's what takes us to that level 3 knowledge of kind of analyzing and picking apart. So I think it's good for us to hear that it's okay to ask questions there's not specific answers to.
Correct.
And that's really how we facilitate discussion, mm-hmm. right? Anything more you want to say on that one?
No.
Like, kind of thing, right? Because that's kind of what we do. That's what we view as class involvement, that I talk at you for a while and I throw a question
right.
and then 2 seconds have gone by and nobody answered it. So now I answer mm-hmm. this question. Guys, ask a question and shut up. Like, right? I mean, just sit back, let people talk about it.
Right.
We talk about a lot of student engagement,
mm-hmm.
and that's kind of counterintuitive for what we know as adult education of lecturing. Let's talk about that kind of facilitation. We talk about a lot of the planning. Let's get into kind of the delivery end,
mm-hmm.
and what does it really look like? What do you see as you're observing classrooms? What does effective throwing out questions to prompt discussion look like?
Right. So it looks planned. You can tell when someone has planned well. So when I'm going into a room and really I'm looking for small group instruction and seeing how the kids are engaged, those groupings, you know, which we had talked about earlier, and we may talk about again later, it depends on what you're trying to get across. So I might go in and have a homogeneously grouped set of children where they're all on the same level, and it's, you know, day 2 of instruction. So they really don't have the foundation of it. But there's still a lot of back and forth, and the end goal is the teacher really facilitating eventually. So hopefully by day 3 or 4, the kids are engaged in activities that they're talking and manipulating and doing and sharing. And you're asking specifically planned questions that draw out the content that you want to hear that they know and provide opportunities for them to have conversations and discourse. Because when they're talking about it, you can hear if they know it. If they can talk about it, they do typically grasp the concept. So, and then there's also the heterogeneously grouping the kids. So I might go in and see that there's a mixed group. That might be on day 3 or 4 of instruction where they are grasping it more. And now you want to mix the learning groups so that they're all hearing from each other. They all have something to share. And I think what we learn as adults is we tend to learn a lot more from our peers than we do from somebody standing up and talking to us or sharing a PowerPoint.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's directly applicable. So we're going to be, in our industry, we're going to be a heterogeneous group, mm-hmm. period. Like we just are, with experience, with knowledge, with
right.
Different abilities. And I think we also hit some other learning and instructional challenges in our industry because we're a doing industry. Adult education is sit in the classroom and just be talked at. And we got into this industry because we didn't want to sit in classrooms and be talked at for years and years and years. So we got into a doing job where we get out and we apply, kinetic skills and everything. So it's a very good package for us too. Then we're engaged, drawn into this,
Yes.
and we're going to have this, like I said, this heterogeneous mix that we're just all over the place. I love that it's intentional. I mean, you just plan it, like, right? Is there a good opportunity for we have these groups of students, we throw out some discussion questions to provoke this discussion in a small group. Is it an appropriate thing to then have groups talk to groups in a larger class setting that two, three, four over here are having this discourse? They're discussing their difference of opinions. That if there's a consensus now in this group, can we take that consensus compared to this consensus? Is that then just compounding the benefit of this peer-led discussions?
So I would say if you're talking about a large group of people that you have split into different learning groups rather than in our situation, yes, we're working with a small group and the other kids are in groups. They're doing something very different than what I, as an instructor, am doing with my kids. But in the scenario you're talking about, yes, because their conversations are very different. So one group is taking the information as they perceive it and sharing within their own. So splitting them up again, or having them present and offer out questions, oh, was yours similar to mine? Having that mix and mingle because, it just makes sense. You're tied to that one group. You're tied to that one bit of knowledge. The more that you get to bounce around, the more you're going to grab from everybody else and build it.
And I think there's a good way for us to tie this into some of our skills practice. Like we're talking a lot about the classroom stuff, and I'm going to ask your opinion on this one, that we go perform an evolution, whatever it may be, fire evolution. We've been doing cardiac arrest management recently. We perform this evolution, we apply our knowledge, our skills, and then we debrief it afterward. We go back and kind of review. And classically, it will be me as the facilitator telling you what I want to do differently next time. Right? That's kind of where we get. What kind of benefit do you see from your perspective of it being, it's always like, what do you guys think? And it was good enough. It's fine. We're fine. And then there's no like good improvement. And then it comes to me and we just here's do these things better. I love asking what you liked about it or what you didn't like about it. What kind of thoughts do you have on that kind of debriefing, and how do we make it more like this student-led discussion, peer-led discussion with some discourse? How do we take these concepts out of the classroom and kind of put it in that post-evolution debriefing to enhance learning?
So I think I need to more clearly. Are you looking at feedback that you're wanting to get from your presentation or to understand what they've learned as they walk away?
For this one, I want this is performance feedback to these learners. Yes.
Their performance?
Their performance. That how do we get them evaluating their performance and kind of having these discussions? Because like I said, the default will always be, it was good enough. Like nothing went catastrophically wrong, so it's fine. But we can always be better. So, what are some of these good, are there some general open-ended questions like that we can throw out to give people's wheels turning a little bit?
I think yes, you could do open-ended questions and get some more feedback, but I think the best takeaway for people to see what they know or what they like is to give them the opportunity to assess the situation, not like a did you like it? Can you do this? What went wrong? But more a series of targeted questions that they get to rate themselves on. Because then are they there? Are they almost there? And they're letting you know where they think they're at. So then you have an idea of where to go after that situation. Does that make sense? Because if the majority of them are like, ugh, I have no idea what you were talking about all day, well, we need to revamp this entire presentation.
Yeah, so there's where we transform from somebody saying things to you
right.
and expecting you to absorb it to you coming to some conclusions on your own, you
yes.
having some realization.
You're self-reflecting.
And, I mean, you always listen to yourself, right? Like, our inner voice is like, you're great,
mm-hmm.
you're fabulous.
Right.
And getting to do that, I think that's a good opportunity for us to evaluate. Something I like throwing at crews is just is there something you would do differently if you did this evolution again, or if you were running this evolution,
mm-hmm.
would you do something differently? Do you see value in that kind of question?
I do, because it does make them have to reflect on what they did and really think about it. But it also provides the answer of, yes, I think I did great. I'm not going to do anything, right? So you want it to be a question that, yes, is going to make them think about what they did, but makes them give you an answer. So to just say, hey, how would you do this differently? Or would you, instead of would you do this differently, hey, next time something goes wrong, you tell me what it is and what would you do differently, right?
Yeah.
So now you're throwing a different scenario at them, right? We just did it this way, but what if this happens? So really making the question be something that has them apply what they're going to do or how they would change it rather than would you.
Okay, so
how would you?
So we get to kind of throw some more what ifs
mm-hmm.
and expand that creativity.
Yes.
Okay. I think they're all valuable things. This is all stuff that we can do better. I mean, these are all things that we do, and these are good enhancements on how we take more information from it. Okay, let me get around, because I'm having a lot of fun. Really good discussion, and I want to make sure I don't get too far off track, because that's what I do. Let's talk about this facilitation end in delivering it, because I want to make sure this is a very clear thing,
mm-hmm.
right? That, yes, you have a big responsibility as the educator, as the instructor, as this person delivering, or the person carrying this responsibility for knowledge transfer,
yes.
whatever we choose to call it. So big responsibility, yes, but you've made a lot of comments about the students, the learners, doing a lot of things. So sounds like a lot of the work is in the planning and the prep,
mm-hmm.
and then actual execution is, here you go, students. Here's
right.
things that you're doing.
Yes.
And that's the value of collaborative learning. Like, that's where this learning comes from in these students. You had mentioned some of these, we would talk about like heterogeneous and homogeneous groups with ability levels.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of want to circle back to that a little bit, because there's some changing practices that you and I had discussed that it
yes.
classically had been your high-performing students, here you go in a pod.
Right.
Your mid-range students, here you are in a pod. What was classically the thinking of that benefit? Like, what benefit was that, classically speaking? What do we see that as?
If you're working with homogeneous groups, then typically they have similar pieces that are missing or similar strengths that you can build on. So the planning for that tends to be a little easier
mm-hmm.
Than your heterogeneously grouped students or learners. So I think you, as a teacher, feel more successful when because you can just hone in on that one area.
Mm.
It takes a lot more brain power to do heterogeneously groups because the questioning is going to be so varied. You've got a variety of learning styles and abilities. So your pre-planning and your questioning is more intense and you have more opportunity for a variety of misunderstandings.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
But is there still some value in homogeneous groups?
Oh, yes.
That's
yeah,
opportunity
I think
for a win.
For sure, because initially in education, you know, we're teaching something I mentioned earlier, like we're teaching whole group the first day. The second day, we're moving into groups that typically should be, in my opinion, homogeneously grouped, because you're really just learning what do they know right now,
mm-hmm.
right? So to look at them as level learners at that time then can help you develop the heterogeneous groups for the next 2 days.
Okay.
And plan them wisely based on what these kids have learned from the initial lesson.
Yeah, and then these homogeneous groups, realistically, they're not doing the same thing. Like, we
Correct.
put people in groups, and there's going to be subsets of the overall lesson, which then ties back to our vertical alignment and planning piece, that your group that's ahead and they get it and they
Correct.
don't need to revisit the topics again. We need to know where to push them so they're engaged and challenged. The vertical alignment
Yes.
helps. And then there are ones that need a little bit more time and attention. We need to know what their baseline needs to be. So we need to be aligned of what they should be coming in at. And if they're not, how do we remedy that? So that's, I think that's an important piece, that you're not
Yes.
differentiating out learning abilities just to give them all the same lesson in a small group. That
Correct. Each one is different.
this is going to be
Yes.
different stuff. And I like how you kind of laid this out over a couple of days. And typically our stuff isn't over a couple of days, but
Right.
we have company assignments. So lieutenants, you have your personnel for an extended period of time. Don't plan on one drill one day of the tour, that maybe this is a couple of tours in the making that we spend and come back to these topics, so that we realize what people learn in these homogeneous groups, and then we can start splitting them and mixing these abilities. So we start out with, hey, our 15, 20 plus year guys are going to be over here. Our under 5 year group's going to be over here, kind of learning from each other, sorting
Right.
this out. That there's the benefit then of mixing these. That this is, but this is like a newer concept. You said this isn't a long-standing practice of heterogeneous groups, right?
Yes, it, I mean, it's always been an option, but I think that as we're getting into, teaching things in small group and learning more, it was easy. Like I said, to do,
And who doesn't
let's,
like easy,
right?
right?
Your easy levels. So it is an adjustment for a lot of instructors and teachers to consider grouping like that. Like I said, because it is intentional and it's not random selection, and it is pre-planned and planned well, to help everybody.
And while we're talking about groups, let's talk about being in a group with your buddies. Because who doesn't like hanging out with your friends? What are some thoughts you want to share about some drawbacks of student-selected groups and going who you're comfortable with and who
Excellent.
you know?
Yes. I love that because even with teacher education and us going for our own professional development, we are guilty of going along and, not having to mix and mingle with other people, which is interesting because our whole job is doing that. But with students, letting them, it's okay to occasionally have that happen, right? Again, it's done with
With
good
intention,
intention.
right?
So if you are planning that they're going to pick their partners, you have planned it. It's not just on a whim. So that they do have that ability and that comfort level of, I am with my friends. But then that can get debilitating because they only are surrounded by those particular thoughts, and you want to broaden their horizons and allow them to hear what other people have to say. So it can be good, just like we talked about homogeneous and heterogeneous, but it should be intentionally planned. And looking at what your end goal is, you do want to get all kids to intermingle and hear from each other. And that's just in life in general. You start teaching them now to do that, they're more likely to do it as they get older and be more comfortable with it and feel knowledgeable no matter what.
And there's really nothing wrong with being a little uncomfortable,
No.
right? Like that's kind of our profession, right?
Very uncomfortable right now.
Let's get comfortable being uncomfortable. That's
Yes.
where amazing things happen, outside the comfort zone. So I like you reiterating that that's intentional if it's picking your own groups. It might be a challenge for us if we're doing company drills and there's five people. It's going to be a five person drill. I mean, it's not going to be small groups
Right.
at that point. We are the small group, so we may not always get to pick that, but look for those kind of opportunities to intermingle, mix that up. You'll see that with some of the cardiac arrest drills that we've been running lately, is you're going to run with crews that you don't typically run with, because we want to enhance that discomfort factor and negotiate that. Let's navigate discomfort. No big deal. So the more time we spend in discomfort, the bigger our comfort zone gets, and we just could become more and more capable. So heterogeneous groups, we mix it up. What kind of activities does it look like in a heterogeneous group that you have students really getting it, and those that are kind of starting to get frustrated because this is like the third or fourth time they've heard this and something's not sticking, and why don't I understand? Or in our context, we have somebody with 15 years of experience that I've screwed it up enough times that it has sunk in this way, and we have somebody new that's knows it from the book but hasn't even seen it applied yet. What, how do you see that with students that we could then generalize it to experience levels of activities?
What's, right.
What does that look like?
So I would say, just like with adults, you know, your team knows who is higher level mm-hmm. within rank and whatnot. Students are very keen to that as well. So when they come together in a heterogeneous group and they're sharing, if the activities are planned well, it's not about that person knows more than me. It's about we have an end goal and we're all working to achieve it. So everybody's listening to each other. Mm. So your intention as the presenter is, you know, this is what I had in mind. They're not aware of that in the moment of it when I'm thinking about children in that type of learning environment.
Do we see the same kind of activities? Is this still some facilitated discussion among the group to draw out the benefit of these different experience levels? Or do heterogeneous and homogeneous groups have totally different small group activities?
So they can be similar, but typically if you're wanting to draw out in a heterogeneous group, which in my opinion, the intention is to have discourse amongst each other and learn from each other, that the activities would be different. Mm-hmm. Whereas homogeneous groups, let's say on our day two, are more content specific, and on let's day three or four with heterogeneous groups, it's combining multiple skills. So that they're having to draw from a variety of background knowledge. And that way it provides all levels the opportunity to share, because mm-hmm. just because you're good in one area doesn't mean you're going to be great in another.
Which is a fantastic point to make, that we are very much a team sport here.
Yes.
And no one person can be the best at every little thing there is, that we have to have those things
yes.
together. I think that's a good point to make. And I want to take the concept of discourse and kind of demystify it for us. Okay. That, I guess, like in a nutshell, you have differing opinions, and mm-hmm. this is good stuff to discuss. And that might be an unnerving concept for us. We're very structured and regimented, and here we go.
Right.
That this is not some type of debate in mm-hmm. a disrespectful way. This is not.
Right.
That there are very respectful, appropriate, and courteous ways to have discourse. Mm-hmm. And am I understanding it correctly to think that simply with here's a concept and somebody saying, yeah, but what about mm-hmm. where this plays in?
Right.
That's discourse.
Yes.
That absolutely has a place for us.
Yes.
That, like I said, we're very structured.
Mm-hmm.
That ranking officer said, here's how it goes. And in application on the fire ground, in the clinical operating space, yes, maybe there's not the best time for discourse. Patient safety is a great time for discourse of, hey, mm-hmm. have we considered these things? But as we're talking about the learning environment, is it really as simple as that of, guys, here's a concept.
Right.
And somebody chimes in with, I understand this concept. This makes sense. What if this was part of the circumstance?
Right.
Is it as simple as that?
It is as simple as that. It can be. And that goes, again, intentional planning. So teaching discourse and providing, you know, I appreciate a good sentence stem when I'm at a training. So providing the stems that allow for healthy discourse.
Give us an example of a sentence stem for those of us okay. that are just like, I give medicine since the start.
Okay.
What the heck's a
so
sentence
one
stem?
Would be, I agree with so-and-so because, and then you back it up with your knowledge.
Okay.
Or I disagree. It can be, I hear what you're saying. I saw it this way. You know,
so just a jumping off point is
correct.
All it is. Okay. And there's your intentional planned mm-hmm. discourse.
Yes.
Guys, it's not a problem to disagree. Hopefully I've shown you that when you come in, we have discussions. I don't mind respectful disagreement. This kind of discourse is appropriate. It still does fit in your chain of command to have different perspectives. And there is the appropriate way to say, hey, Lieutenant, hey, Captain, hey, Chief. Here's a circumstance that I want to discuss. What about this part of it? How do we apply what you just gave us to this kind of thing? I'm not connecting the dots. Let's discuss how to connect the dots. I'm telling you that. That is appropriate. Now, don't come in and be a jerk You're like, you didn't teach us this. That's not gonna fly. Okay. Respect and appropriate behavior still exist. Same kind of thing with the classroom. That
yes.
I can't imagine that we have a group and some student fires off, some fourth grader fires off of, listen up, jerk, your idea's stupid.
Mm-hmm.
That's not gonna fly. Teacher's
right.
gonna intervene on that. Right? About the relationships, appropriate interactions, but having different opinions.
Yes.
Again, back to this level three knowledge, this multiple appropriate answers to a question, to a situation, to a challenge. We're creating solutions that will be supported by, we call it evidence, but it's here's the knowledge and the content that supports mm-hmm. that decision of being able to provide evidence, that's what we need to do, and that comes from discourse. And that's how we enhance learning as peers, is intentionally structuring discourse
yes.
into the lesson.
Yes.
So you're telling me that when we plan training, we should plan for an opportunity where these people turn and look at each other and throw some, yeah, but what about this? And what do you think of that at each other?
Exactly. Yes.
Okay, so that's a little different than standing in front of the room and just talking right. away for hours and hours. Right.
Yes.
So I love it. So this facility, so step back. So the planning is difficult and very, I don't want to say laborious, but that's where the bulk of the work goes, then being intentional and planning.
Yes.
And the execution is kind of, how do we shift the work to students? How do we put it out?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say it's easy, because a good, well-planned lesson probably looks easy
right.
to facilitate. I'm sure that instructors on eggshells the whole time watching for these things,
yeah.
right? So the preparation, right? Ounce of prevention
mm-hmm.
kind of thing looks easier, but really, would you agree with that the bulk of the workload should be in the planning on the instructor, and then as a facilitator, it's just making sure that things are moving the way they're supposed to?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and, you know, really listening and watching, right? Oh, they look engaged. Well, you need to hear what they're talking about. You need to be very aware, right?
Okay. And I guess this comes us around, like, as we're kind of sequentially moving through a lesson here. We talked mm-hmm. about the planning. We talked about the delivery. We talked about differentiating abilities and how do we package that and put it through. We started with the end goal in mind of, here's what we're set to accomplish. Here's the concept. People will have enough, a high enough level of mastery in to have some discussions or create circumstances on where you would apply it and what's it look like, and creating solutions. And not just spitting back
right.
information, not just the recall. So how do we leave this lesson knowing we've accomplished that objective? How do we plan that
mm-hmm.
intentionally into part of our lesson of verifying that we've accomplished our objective? What does that look like?
So my thought is that you actually start with what your success criteria is going to be.
Mm.
So if they already know what the end product is that you're going to expect from them, they're automatically more likely to be engaged. They know there's going to be some kind of outcome. They know how they're going to be held accountable. So you start with that success criteria and you make it clear. And that can look like, you know, we talked about how they might be in groups and they're going around and sharing. Well, that sharing might be documented on something. And they've got to share that documentation, or they're going to do what we in education call jigsaw. And, you know, you're going to learn this piece and you're going to teach it to the group. You're going to learn that piece and teach it to the group. You know, lots of times in teaching, there's a exit ticket. So those would be specifically planned questions that you want to answer to see that they truly understand the content. But again, it can be an open-ended question, but if you're specifically looking for key pieces, then you need to make sure that question is worded to get that vocabulary out in the answer. And I mentioned earlier about them, you know, letting you know where they rate. So you provide them a variety of questions where they have to say, you know, where do I think I fall on that?
Mm-hmm.
And really self-reflect on that information.
So let's pull two concepts out here. We talk about kind of the exit tickets, and to help us relate to what we do at a very minimalistic level,
mm-hmm.
I give you a written test
okay.
to try and verify you have learned something.
Right.
That's kind of what we're talking about, as an exit ticket.
Okay.
Ish.
Yes.
Right? Like, very poor kind of thing.
Right. Regurgitation.
But that's what you're talking about when you mean exit ticket, is there's some type of closeout.
There
but
is some type
about,
of closeout.
But we're talking about much better approaches that I've seen you create solutions to problems we put in front of you.
Right.
I've seen you deliver the information to somebody else as part of the small group. That those are conceptually the same as a written test.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to display true understanding and true application compared to recognizing this is the answer of one of the four provided.
Exactly.
So that's what y'all will see when we do our continuing education. When you come up and you run drills, we run evolutions, there isn't some written test. That's what's written into the plan because the state wants to see it. For it to qualify for continuing education, there has to be some evidence of learning is what's written into the administrative code for us, which is fine. Great. We should be doing that. That's just good practice in education. And it's not necessarily a written test. Like a lot of times you're saying it's not a written, but there's still written tests in school.
Yes.
They still happen.
Right.
There's still standardized testing.
Yes.
That happens, right? Will forever happen. But we verify that learning happened not necessarily on paper. It's an interactive process.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. And that's an intentional thing that comes with it. I said there were two things. Now I'm forgetting what the second was. But this
I'm glad you're forgetting.
Right. So we have this exit thing. We got to make sure we know we accomplish this objective. Telling them up front, tongue in cheek, giving them answers to the test.
Mm-hmm.
And I like using that expression of giving answers to the test that people worry about, will I remember this for a test? And really, who cares if you remember it for a test? Because that's not what we're doing.
Right.
Our upfront, I'm going to ask you to apply the knowledge we're learning today to handle this problem.
Mm-hmm.
And people are like, oh, man. So when we have enough knowledge, like they're going to know when they've accomplished the objective.
Right.
That we're going to get to a point in the lesson and it's, oh, I now know that I'm successful. You've given the success criteria up front. And like I said, tongue-in-cheek, giving the answers to the test.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not about memorization. It's not about, I'll give you all the test questions. It's, can you apply it? Can you use it? What do you do with it? I like that aspect up front. Sometimes I like comparing education to sales,
mm-hmm.
that you're trying to get somebody to buy your product,
right?
And I think that's one of our great ways in adult education that, hey, Ms. Perry, here's why this matters.
Mm-hmm.
Here's why you should spend time paying attention to this. Here's why you should be engaged in these activities today. That, like, what a benefit. And you're saying that part of the intentional planning, like, that's it, that we identify these as a group. The grade levels do this. They turn to you and say, Ms. Perry, hey, we're kind of at a stumbling spot here. And you're like, great, here's these resources. Here's these ideas. Here's these concepts.
Mm-hmm.
That we're shortchanging our learners to not tell them that. Hey, guys, here's the plan. Here's the end point. Here's the objective.
Yes. If they don't know the purpose.
Right. I like it. Mm-hmm. I would like to learn like that. What's the point of me being here today? Here it is. And I think we try to do this as adult learners. It's one of the earlier slides in the PowerPoint of here's our learning objectives.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's kind of cut and paste from a textbook of the learning objectives. I'd encourage us to do, like, step back from it, be a little bit more broad. Like, what does this learning objective look like applied to circumstance?
Right.
And that be our goal.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it kind of looks like in these team plannings? Is you take the TEKS, you take the state learning objectives, performance objectives, but it is a bigger package of what we're accomplishing.
Yes. There's a lot of back and forth discussion and, you know, you want them to leave feeling successful and ready to target those kids and make them learn.
And to tie back to some other episodes that we've heard about with students understanding what they're learning, in your experience, has there ever been an administrator that comes in the classroom and asks students, or you go into the classroom and ask students, what are you learning? And is it a reasonable expectation for them to say, oh, Ms. Perry, we're learning, we're working on this today? Is that what they should be able to do?
Yes, that is exactly what they should be able
so,
to do.
So that's a good evaluation of how this lesson is being delivered. This is a good direct evaluation of the instructor at that point.
Yes.
For the student, not necessarily giving you the answers, but we're working on this concept.
Exactly.
I don't know how to do it yet, but this is what we're accomplishing today.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
And that goes back to Chase Campbell. I can't remember what number episode that one is, but Chase talked about coaching and feedback, and his kind of thing was, if your students can't preach it, you didn't teach
mm-hmm.
it.
Exactly.
So I think that ties right into what you were saying about here's your success criteria up front, that at any given moment, a student should be able to say, here's our end point of this.
Right.
Here's the purpose of this.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we get to the end, you can explain how to apply it, but that's yes. successful instruction. That's a successfully started lesson that students know what we're learning today.
Yes.
Right? And you do that. That's what you go into the classroom.
I do. I go in and...
So wait, you go in and sit next to a five-year-old. You go sit next to a kindergartner, mm-hmm. and they should be able to say, we're working on something.
Yes. They should be able to tell me what they're working on. I'm not concerned on the outcome, depending on, like you said, like, are we looking to master it today? Or do they just know what are they learning right now?
So if this
and why?
So this is a reasonable expectation of such young children mm-hmm. to be that invested in owning in their own learning. I feel like we could readily apply this to us as adult learners. Like we have some more developed cognitive capacity that we can really appreciate it mm-hmm. more and see what it is. So take that with you. If you are running a drill and the people in front of you listening to you don't know what you're accomplishing with that drill, you've missed a real opportunity to draw them in and enhance that learning.
Yes.
Would you agree with that statement?
I definitely agree with
right?
that.
Right. What an opportunity. Mm-hmm. I guess that's the other thing, is these are opportunities to get better at what we do.
Yes. Because
we as an industry, like I was telling you, we don't prepare our people to teach.
Yes.
We get really good at our job and then say, hey, go teach somebody, but I don't know any of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then I feel like a failure because I haven't been taught how to instruct or how to teach or how to convey knowledge to somebody
right.
else. So here we are, again, with this chunk of the podcast that we're talking about instructional strategies and techniques and how do we get better at it, because mm-hmm. we just haven't. So great. So let's kind of recap on this stuff that we talked about. Planning is intentional. It's got to be planned. Like shooting from the hip, can't really count on that. If we're successful shooting from the hip, that is luck. That might be the Lord's work. You don't get to take credit for that one, right? Intentionally planned work,
right,
is what sets us up for success. Differentiating these different abilities is what gives us the ability to engage all of our learners, mm-hmm. and the one-size-fits-all package just...
No, telling isn't teaching, right? It targets one particular...
Telling is not teaching. Then we give these small groups things to do, and another concept, again, that we've heard in a previous episode is the person talking is the person learning.
Mm-hmm.
So get the students talking, or even in our case, the person doing is the person learning, is the same kind of concept. Because you're facilitating. Step back, right? Plan it, package it, set the package out, and let the students unpack this lesson, okay? What else, right? Students, collaborative work, and then verify we learned. That if we don't verify we learn, I think it goes back to how I talked about our objective is to get through a PowerPoint. Mm-hmm. But if we set an objective, we articulate that up front, and then we verify we've accomplished the objective, we've done the learning. We verify the learning's happened instead of just, I've made it through a PowerPoint, right? Make that objective the learning. Right? Right? And if your students can't preach it, you didn't teach it. All these fun little
I'm
things.
Going back with that one.
Take that one. That was from our junior high gym teacher.
Okay.
Right? So with sixth grade, he even said it about sixth graders was his example. It's mm-hmm. like, even these sixth graders, for as sarcastic as they're going to be, as squirrely as they are, like that's on me as their gym teacher, that if they don't know what we're covering in gym today, what we're learning in gym, then I'm failing as a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point, you have to find how you reach these different students, their different abilities, different personal circumstances, that we have some with families, some with not. Students come in with all their socio-emotional needs that are all over the board. But yet teachers have to find some way to reach these children with these socioeconomic needs, whatever it is, psychosocial needs. We won't even get into the whole Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and all of these things need to be addressed to reach our students, right? It applies to us as adult learners too, but we've got to reach these students. So, Ms. Perry, I really appreciate you coming and chatting about this stuff. This, I got very excited, I think, as we may have noticed. Are there any closing comments, any final thoughts that you wanted to bring in that you didn't get a chance to fit in here? Something, anything else you want to close out with today?
You know, I think it's just... When you look at whatever you're doing to your ticket out or whatever it is to see what knowledge that they have, that it is something that you facilitate and you yourself take and reflect as as an instructor. You know, I know as the learners, they need to reflect, but we too, as instructors, need to walk away and make sure, you know, we really do understand if they've learned the content or not.
I like it. And I'm going to close asking you to validate me on one thing, that I can do all the greatest planning and I can have the best intentions of it, and I can go to deliver this lesson and it can go completely south in a heartbeat and just fall apart and be nothing like I hoped, that you're going to screw it up sometimes. Like, sometimes it is going to go wrong.
Yes.
And that's okay.
It is very okay.
So perfection's not the goal.
No.
Progress is our goal.
Mm-hmm.
So you pick up, you dust off, you evaluate that, and maybe we repackage it differently, see what
yes.
went sideways, and we deliver again. So would you agree with this? Like, you're gonna screw it. Like, to expect perfection is just mean to yourself. You're going to screw it up sometimes.
It depends on your audience. I mean, I've had it happen to me. 45-minute presentation, I go in, I think I know my kids. They're learning time. They should know time. And it all went south when they, you know, didn't even know which hand was the hour or the minute hand.
Oh.
So on the spot, you readjust and you back it up to what they do know and you start building from there.
Would you agree that maybe a good defense to that is being focused on that objective and not so much the things we're going to do? It's not the tasks or the activities. Focus
yes.
on the objective,
mm-hmm.
and it makes it a little bit easier to throw out the course you had laid out
right.
because it's not going to be effective
yes.
and adjust. Is focusing on that objective is how we're going to reconcile that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't follow through on something you already know is a sinking ship.
Mm.
You need to go ahead and adjust in the moment because you're going to have to go back and redo it. Anyway, so if you're just trying to complete something because you put it on a sheet of paper and you need to accomplish this task, who are you benefiting there?
Mm.
You're yourself. You
mm-hmm.
did what you said you were going to do, but your audience is walking away with nothing.
I like it. I like it from that. Well, again, Ms. Perry, I really appreciate your time to come spend with us today, spending the afternoon with us talking about this stuff. And maybe we'll even get to chat again.
Awesome.
These days.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening in, and we'll catch you for the next one.